Sports Day for Kia. The new Kia Niro electric SUV range has landed. And Spud Shed. Crazy cheap prices on the free Spud Shed app.
Yes, great to have you with us on this Friday night. Mark Redding sitting alongside Paul Hazelby, who's sporting a moustache. We'll find out exactly why in the very near future. We want you to give us a call as well. It's 133882. Every caller tonight, by the way, first nine callers get a horse in the Cox Plate. Winner gets a $50 voucher thanks to the Bottle-O. The Bottle-O, gotta love your local, the Bottle-O. Hayes, good evening.
Good evening to you, Skeet. What do you make of the moustache? I'm 40 years of age now, and my old man's always had a moustache, and I thought I might try one on. What do you think?
Now, I'm not sold. You know, it doesn't matter to me. It doesn't matter to most people, but you know what it matters to? Your wife, Nicole. So as long as she's giving you the imprimatur to keep pushing ahead with it, I would say go for your life, young
she
man.
She hates it. She hates it. And the reason I've got it, to be completely honest, of course, I did that ride last week, and the first day the conditions were very wet, and we were out there for about 6 or 7 hours, and I've got a bit of a cold sore below my nose that's quite prominent. I thought, how can I cover that up? I'm growing a moustache. I tried the beard. I don't like growing beards for too long. So then I got rid of it, and now I just have the moustache left.
Yeah, there have been some very famous men of your age who've had a moustache. I think of Mick Malthouse back in the day. Ted Lasso, you
Ted Lasso! I've just been watching that one, and it's been fascinating, and I look a bit like him.
Well, that's your opinion, not the rest of society's. Now, by the way, the big talking point, not just for the last 24 hours, but it's been ongoing, the Ben Simmons circus. And the question tonight we ask on 133882, is it time for Ben to swallow his pride, go back, play for the 76ers, and essentially get back into this outfit and win back some respect, not only from the Philadelphia club, but also from fans around the world? Where do you sit with this?
Oh, I'm pretty strong. I've had enough of him. My perception of this guy has completely changed. Look, I was disappointed when he missed out on the Olympic Games for the second time, and also the World Cup prior to that, when he always talks about wanting to represent Australia, and he talked about working on his shot so that he could improve. And then he went back to training reluctantly, didn't give it any effort. If you're going to make a decision and go back, give it something. He didn't want to be there. He didn't like to greet many of his staff there. Now, if you've got a gripe with the club, you don't need to take it out on anyone or everyone, and now he has skipped a planned session, an individual workout that he was supposed to do, citing a sore back. Now, sources say that he's okay and he's been cleared by the team doctors, but there's just another day, another excuse from Ben Simmons. And look, it's going to keep going because 76ers president Daryl Morey, he came out today and said people should buckle in. It could take 4 years. Let's hope it doesn't take 4 years, but he still has 4 years left remaining on that contract. They're not going to budge. $168 million he signed for across the five-year deal. So you break that down, it's a lot of money, and every other club, every other person in basketball is looking and watching to see how he reacts from this point, to see whether he may be a person of interest for their club. And right now, if you're watching this, there's no way you can pay that sort of money to have a guy behaving and acting as badly as he is.
And the question is, we have to ask, when it comes to Australian sporting stars, and let's be honest, a lot of people were disappointed he didn't go. This is Ben Simmons to the Olympics with the national team. Are there other cases that we can bracket Ben Simmons in at the moment? When you think of the tennis scene, is obviously quite obvious with the Bernard Tomic and Nick Kyrgios, where you lose the love and the admiration of the Australian sporting public. Yeah, even cricket, Dave Warner after Sandpapergate, James Heard maybe at Essendon after what happened there from player to coach. Are we going down that same path with Ben?
This one's a bit different because we did love him for what he was able to do early on in his career. He was one of our best exports of all time. It's just this incident. He needs to let it go. He needs to drop the ego for this one. And look, he had a chance to do that, to go back to training and give it everything. And look, people are forgiving if you make one mistake in life, maybe two. But when you rock up with a poor attitude, Australians won't cop that. And Americans right now aren't copping it as well. So look, I don't want to put him in the Bernard Tomic category because Bernard has done that over a long period of time. But look, he's fallen out of love with a lot of Australians, and I just don't know how he's going to win that back, not only with this team, the team he goes to in the future, and what about for our Australian team in the future? Do we welcome him back with open arms given what's gone on? I'm not sure. I'm not around it as close as many others, but I know if that was a footballer in this case, they do a lot of damage and you don't want to spend them and you don't want them to be a part of your organisation.
I can tell you now, I think he lost a lot of fans by not going to Tokyo. from an Australian perspective. But 133.882.
And it would have been great for him, wouldn't it? Looking back now, he would have played in an environment that was loving towards him, and he hadn't been feeling that love from his teammates. Everybody would have got behind him. It would have been less pressure in a sense, particularly the training camp. So a good opportunity for him to play against inferior defenders to work on that jump shot. And then, of course, the Olympic Games. There's some easy games that are a part of that. He would have got some confidence. He would have got a bronze medal, maybe a bit more with him in the team. It would have been fantastic for him and his image, but he didn't go. And since then, it's only gone from bad to worse.
Absolutely. Let's bear in mind, of course, the NBA, the NFL, American sport, a little different to what we're used to here in Australia. Traditionalists over here have a slightly slanted view as to how that should play out. And maybe those who follow American sports religiously will be able to give us a different take, including Albie, who's in Allenbrook. Hi, Albie. How are you going?
Yeah, g'day, guys. Look, a couple of points. Firstly, I think the James Heard, the David Warner thing, you know, that was probably, you know, if they had their time back, they wouldn't do it again. I don't think Ben Simmons would be the same. I think he'd do the same thing. Very disappointed that he didn't play for Australia. But the thing that really, really grinds me up in this one is, you know, he's acting like Kyrgios and you know, a few flogs in tennis, but that's an individual sport. This is a team sport, and he's just acting like an absolute brat. It is really, really gutting and disappointing because we were, you know, me and my mates really, really behind, you know, so excited when he got drafted and, you know, just following everything he was doing. And now he's just turned into that typical, and he's such a vile sport as far as that goes. I mean, could you imagine Gary Ablett Jr. or one of those acting like that, like LeBron does, going, it's about time I get told that I'm the greatest of all time. Like, we just don't get that. Like, no one would compare themselves to Michael Jordan in AFL or in the NRL or the rugby union or anything like that. It just seems to be this sport, and unfortunately it's got a hold of him, and he's just pretty much ruining his brand.
Albie, thanks for your call. I think you speak for a lot of Australians, but again, we're coming from a very different landscape to American sporting people and athletes who they handle their lot in life so differently.
Well, the NBA today, I think, released a 75 all-time list for their 75 anniversary, and Klay Thompson missed out. And he's come out today and said, I'm really disappointed. I thought I'd done enough to be inside that 75. So it shows you the difference between the culture over there in America and here in Australia. You'd never have an Australian come out and say they should have been in a certain team. It's just not the way we operate. But thanks for your call there. We're going to give Albie Mwanga in the Cox Plate.
Okay, Mwanga, and let's just have a look at that. Mwanga at $10 on Tab Touch Fix. Hugh Bowman on board. So a first of nine callers will get a runner in the Cox Plate. The winner gets a $50 voucher thanks to the Bottle-O. Great range, friendly service, and they're independently owned by locals. You've got to love your local, the Bottle-O. Let's go to Kinross, Craig. In fact, let's go to Armidale first, where Daryl's in position. Hi, Daryl.
How you going, boys? Just like the previous caller said, I think people in Australia don't understand American sport. Kawhi Leonard did something similar to go to Toronto. He was injured. San Antonio cleared him. His people said he was injured. Anthony Davis did something similar to the Pelicans. Richard Sherman did something in the NFL similar. There's players who did it as far back as Shaq who refused to do certain things to get traded for money. And Ben Simmons has taken the advice of his agents, and that's what it really comes down to. They want to force a trade, and they'll just degrade his value until someone else will trade him.
Pretty well surmised, I think, Daryl. And again, that's just a different slant to what we might perceive as being the right way of handling these types of issues in Australian sport. And Daryl, your runner in tomorrow's Cox Plate with Paul Hazelby, the man with the hot finger.
Probabil.
There we go. That's number seven for Brett Prebble. Of course, Brett Prebble, one of the guns on the an international jockey scene now at $15 on Fix. So Daryl has Probabil in the Cox Plate. Let's go to Craig in Kinross. Hi, Craig.
Hey, guys. Hi.
Well.
First of all, sorry, Hayes. I gave you a bit of a hard time last night. I apologise for that.
Oh, I don't even remember, mate. No no problem at all.
on the Simmons one, I just thought I'd give look at Patrick Mills. What a champion, number one. Number two, if you follow the baseball, the LA Dodgers today, absolutely awesome. Chris Taylor hit three home runs in the one game.
That's huge.
That is huge. But yeah, Hayes, I totally agree with you about Simmons and that, and comparing to Patrick Mills, what a champion, and even young guy Giddy has stellar start. I'll leave it to you, boys.
Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah, Giddy's, Mills, both so impressive at the weekend, of course. Paddy, now with the Brooklyn Nets, they were beaten first up, and Giddy's shaky start, of course, not he personally, but the OKC. But young man, gee, there's some upside for Giddy's and what he's produced so far.
There's a lot to like, but you do compare those two, and Paddy Mills, he doesn't have the amount of talent that Ben Simmons has got. Ben Simmons has the potential to be our greatest export, if he's not already. Now, this is going to hurt him, but look at the adulation that we have for Paddy Mills. And why? Because he's a fighter. Every time Australia plays, he wants to be a part of it. And then, of course, he's worked really hard for his
flag
teams.
Bearer.
Flag bearer. He's done so much. He's a legend. He's going to be a hero for a long time. He's always going to be remembered as the main player, really, to get us our first bronze medal or Olympic medal when you're talking about basketball in this country. And that could have been Ben Simmons. So you just hope that he looks at that and watches that and says, well, what can I do to be revered like he is, not only in Australia, but all around the world? Good call there from Craig. We're going to give him State of Rest, the international.
State of Rest, the Irish horse for John Allen at $10 on fixed. State of Rest is three runners down, and we're taking the first nine callers, so give us a bell on 133-882. A runner in the Cox Plate and a $50 Bottle-O voucher is up for grabs. Let's go to Carlisle. Gary's there. Hi, Gary.
Yeah, good day, boys. Just wanted to probably parallel a couple of major sporting dummies bits, if I may.
Absolutely.
First one, Derek Kickett in 93, totally spat the chewy when he was dropped for Dean Wallace in the grand final. Essendon's premiership of 93.
Yep.
And one which will probably come up as a little bit surprising, greatest dummy bit would be Shane Warne when he was dropped in the West Indies cricket tour. His form had been really ordinary, and Steve Waugh made the call as captain to replace him with Stuart McGill. And to this day, Shane Warne's never forgiven him, and he can't say find a decent word to say about Steve Waugh.
Now, you summed it up really well. Shane Warne, very harsh on anything Steve Waugh since that moment. You're right, that's been a grudge that he's carried on his back for a long time. And going back to the Derek Kickett incident, well, we know Kevin Shidi, I suppose, in many ways, because the Bombers won in 93 against Carlton. He did the right thing. He got the right result in terms of the team.
Have they patched things up, those two?
I think certainly more so than Steve Waugh and Shane Warne from what we see. But yeah, that's been a long case of just getting their relationship back on track.
Animo for Gary.
Animo. Let's have a look. Animo down the list we go. Horse number nine, the Galloper, the three-year-old that you like for Craig Williams, carrying just 49.5 kilos at $3.80. Plenty of time for your calls, 133-882. You're listening to Sports Day, 20 past 6 on this Friday night. Mark Reddings, Paul Hayes will be taking you through until 8 o'clock. Thanks for joining us on this Friday night, 24 past 6. Beautiful evening here in Perth. Mark Reddings, Paul Hayes will be with you. We're rolling through until 8 o'clock tonight. We're talking Ben Simmons about whether the Australian sporting public has fallen out of love with him over his standoff with the Philadelphia 76ers. And by the way, our first nine callers, we're closing in on that rapidly. Gets a runner in tomorrow's Cox Plate. Our winner picks up a $50 voucher thanks to the Bottle-O. Let's go to Bunbury. Grant, good evening.
How are you going?
We're terrific.
Just on Ben Simmons.
Yep.
Look, when he was first picked up, he was, I thought, this kid's got the world at his feet. With all the talent, natural ability, and et cetera. And I, for one, haven't got the first clue what it takes to be an elite athlete. I guess you've got to have a certain amount of arrogance and belief in yourself, but I think you've also got to have humility. And he doesn't seem to have any humility whatsoever. And he's dragged himself down in the eyes of many Australians. And when he refused to go to the Olympics, which should have been an educational opportunity for him and a chance to bond with his fellow teammates, I think he just threw it all in the bin. And unfortunately, since then, everything has just turned upside down for him. And I don't see he's got a way back. It's going to take a hell of a lot for him to make it back in the eyes of the Australian people, his teammates of his current team or a future team. I think he's on a hiding to nothing at the minute.
Yeah, look, Grant, that's an interesting point because we in Australia, as we've touched on earlier tonight, we're not across, in some respects, the way the NBA and the NFL players operate now. But the fact that players and the coaching staff have come out publicly, and Doc Rivers have come out and actually been critical of Ben, that's saying a lot about what they think this situation's come to.
Yeah, by the time you do that in the public, though, you've got to wonder what's going on behind closed doors, because in elite sport, there's a lot of feedback that is given. It's not always nice. It needs to be directed for the right reasons. And they would have done that, I think, through that final series. But he was reluctant to take the big shots. And at the end of the day, that's his role. Then they went public. Now, maybe they made a mistake going so public with it. But at the end of a game, there's a lot of emotion with that. But clearly, elite sports people should have been able to get on with that from both sides to move on, go forward. And he's had his chance to come back. He decided to come back to training. Of course, he was getting penalised every time he missed a training session. But he came back. There's your one chance to go, righto, I'm going to come back with the right attitude. And that takes a lot of guts to do that. But if you do it right, you can win people over very, very quickly. And he will come back for Australia. I think that will happen. He's too good a player that for us not to put him up there. But even there was an ice hockey game played in Philadelphia recently, and the crowd was booing Ben Simmons. It was F Ben Simmons. So it's not going to stop. Now, imagine once he gets to the games and he sits on the bench and whatnot, it's going to be brutal for a period of time. And then what does he do? Does he go and hide again, or does he face up and maybe an apology is a way out? But clearly he's been given some really poor directions from his management at the moment, and it's a big part of a game for them to try and get to another club. But it hasn't worked so far.
I'm not sure they can reconcile, just given what you've just said, and even 76ers coach Doc Rivers saying the typical fun that surrounds opening day muted with star guard Simmons back home under team suspension. So those trade demands will go back and forth. Now, Grant is, of course, has been good enough to pick up the phone. Who does he have in tomorrow's Cox Plate?
Captivant.
Captivant. Okay, let me have a look down the list here. Captivant, number 10. Drawn, Barrier 1, another lightweight, 49.5 kilos for Dean Yendall, $18. So, captivant for Grant as we go to Jason in St. James. Hi, Jason.
How you going, boys? I think Ben Simmons needs to stop being a sook and start earning some of the money that they've said they'd pay him for doing a good job. But you mentioned Hurd and Warner. I mean, another AFL, or another sportsman that may have lost love was Wayne Carey, back when he slept with his teammate missus and then had a bit of a bender in the States.
It's a good call, and it's one of the great comebacks of all time. It does go to show how forgiving we are. Like, they are two pretty big acts that have occurred, of course, at North Melbourne, first and foremost, and then the one with his partner as well. But he still holds a really prominent position.
But are we more forgiving of big-name players and celebrities than, say, ordinary, say, a run-of-the-mill player? I mean, do we give our big names, players we loved over their careers, a bigger license and maybe a bigger window to get back into our hearts?
Yep. I think there's some that are expendable, so to speak, where they cop it worse than what some of those big names do. And you look back at Wayne Carey, they were pretty big things, and he's come back and he's had a prominent role now for the last, 10 or so years.
Absolutely. Now, Jason, in St. James, Paul Hazelby is judge and jury here. He's just going through the market and also our runners for the Cox Plate. Who are you giving, Jason?
Zaki.
Oh, the $3 favourite. It was a disappointing third last start, but J-Mac's on board. Barrier 6. As we're speaking to Gareth Hall later on in the program, he is going to hopefully tell us which Gallup is going to take out this Group 1 Classic. But Zaki cannot wait to see whether this horse in Great Britain can back up and win itself the Cox Plate.
And you compare Ben Simmons to Easton Wood today. So American sport to Australian rules football. He retired. Now, he had 1 year left on the deal. What sort of money do you think that Easton Wood would have commanded next year? He had a 2-year contract. He saw out one.
four or five?
Yeah, so he's basically foregone that contract. Why? For the betterment of the team, citing that he's declined with injuries. He didn't want to go forward with that and put pressure on the team. Didn't want to be in a situation where the team was forced to make a decision to drop him, which would have caused a bit of unrest, I guess, when you do drop a big name within the team. He, of course, had a great career, 188 games, best and fairest winner, All-Australian, premiership captain, famous premiership captain, of course, Robert Murphy in the seat, but he came in for that final series and he's been a star player. But just goes to show the difference here in Australia, that you've got one that is selfless, thinking of the team, thinking of the club, what can I do to help them going forward? And you've got this other guy who's not putting in, making a lot of money for not even being present at practice.
And just to go back just a few weeks ago, Easton Wood at Optus Stadium, on the cusp really, midway through the third quarter, thinking, hey, I'm going to be a dual premiership player here potentially. And as it turns out, his career an hour and a quarter later is basically done and dusted. 133-882, of course, that news about Easton Wood is part of our news headlines for Polaris, Australia's number one off-road vehicle brand. Get Ranger confidence for the price of a quad. Visit your local Polaris dealer today. 133-882. Still a couple of runners up our sleeve for the Cox Plate. Give us your thoughts about Ben Simmons, David Warner. Should he hold his place in the T20 side? The World Cup kicking off in 24 hours for the Aussies. All that and much more. It's coming up to 29-7. Mark Reddings, Paul Hazelby, Sports Day on this Friday night. Now, terrific to have your company 25-7 Friday night. Mark Reddings, Paul Hazelby with you. We're talking about Ben Simmons, about his role at Philadelphia, whether he's lost some admirers in Australia and around the world with his current predicament, and also Dave Warner. The T20 World Cup is underway, we know that, but the Australians, they've had some pretty average lead-up form. Dave Warner, his form hasn't been great. 133-882, and we've still got a couple of runners to lock away for our Cox Plate draw. Our winner of that gets a $50 voucher thanks to the Bottle-O. Let's go to John in Parkerville. Hi, John.
Yeah, g'day, boys. Look, I'm not trying to take any of the responsibility away from Ben himself. I was fortunate enough to play in the same league as his father back in Melbourne, and his father was a very humble man, very humble, not as gifted as Ben. But in saying that, you know, of all the athletes, all the Australian basketballers that have made it over there, Luke Longley, Bogut, you know, Baines and Joe Ingles, this lad's probably the most gifted of all.
Mm.
And if we think that the Aussie rule players and some of our NBL players here have an expectation with, you know, because they get well paid, in the States, they are brutal. This guy's picking up as much in one game as what some of the fellas get here for a season. So they are very brutal. And unfortunately, he's just been poorly managed. And I'll go further to say something else before I go is, we go back to our Olympics. He didn't represent us in the Olympics, but we look at the women's side that was built around Liz Cambage. It was built around her, and our girls suffered because of that. Again, another act of what I think wasn't really in the Australian spirit. So I'll leave that with you to talk about and listen to what you have to say.
Really good point there. And I know the Simmons has been the discussion point here, Hayes, but Liz Cambage, the incident that happened in Las Vegas prior to the Tokyo Olympics, there's no question that had an unsettling effect on the team. And moving forward, we know there's an investigation into where she sits and the incident. Would you be having Liz Cambage, without knowing all the facts at the moment, as a lock in your Australian team moving forward, given what's happened?
Oh, if she was back healthy, look, she cited some mental health concerns through that period as well, which sometimes athletes make mention of that. But look, she's a bit different to Ben Simmons in the way that she's so important to that team. I think we got through without Ben Simmons, but you think about how important she is to the women's game and the Australian side. I think once she left, it was always going to be pretty hard. And sometimes you want to know early, because if you don't know early who's going to be there, then your planning goes towards having those superstar players in your team. But look, I still think we'll welcome back Ben at some stage if he gets his attitude right, but the damage is done and it's on a bigger scale. You can't even compare the NBA to AFL players. It's completely different. This is being watched all around the world. The global spectrum of this is absolutely massive. So thanks for your call, John. You've got Dallasan.
Dallasan at $26 on fixed for Daniel Moore, drawn barrier 3 for Liam McDonald and Andrew Lewis. So that is the next runner for the WS Cox Plate. A $50 voucher thanks to the Bottle-O up for grabs there. Let's go back to the phones. Mark's in East Frio, wants to talk a bit of cricket and basketball. Hi, Mark.
Yeah, I think for the Australian team moving forward, I think David Warner needs to be dropped. As good as he's been, he seems to me like he's batting without any confidence. And I think T20 cricket's not really a game that you can afford to be playing if you're not walking out confident. So I think Australia need to make the call and either bring in Inglis or Wade to open the batting with Finch. Yeah.
Good call, even Marcus Stoinis. That's where he bats his best, at the top of the order. As I said throughout the week, I just think maybe one more chance for David Warner, but just take the pressure off and say, David, we need you to score quickly. If you can get a quick fire 20 or 30, that's going to hold us in really good stead. Because in this format, you need a fast start. And as we saw the other day when we lost 3 wickets, you bat deep. So you've got that potential to lose one cheaply. But him scratching around is no good for anyone because it puts more pressure on the next guy coming in. Let's go with call sign Mav for Mark.
Call sign. Okay, let's check call sign Mav, a New Zealander. One, it's past 2 starts, by the way. A Luke Nolan on board, 59 kilos, $41 tab touch fix. Just quickly on Dave Warner, he might come out and score 1,000 runs in the Ashes series. We hope he has a really good 5 test matches. But he seems a shadow of himself. You go back to the Ashes series, albeit Stuart Broad had his measure. He struggled with the swinging ball. Can some players just lose their way? He's obviously a talented cricketer. We know that. But there's every time you ask a Nathan Lyon, a coach, Justin Langer, they trust that this bloke will get himself backfiring as soon as possible. We seem to be waiting for the best of Dave Warner more often than not, though.
He's one of the greats of all time. Look, his home record is outstanding in all formats. He has struggled a lot overseas, particularly when you talk about the Ashes over there. In those conditions, he has struggled a lot. But hasn't he changed a lot throughout his career when he first started as a T20 player? He was just so aggressive. But we don't see that much now. He's pretty measured even in ODI cricket and particularly T20 cricket, but it's really hard to gauge, I guess, the regular performances of a lot of our players because they're across so many different formats that he doesn't even play in the Big Bash very often because he's obviously representing our test team. He clearly plays in the IPL regularly and he's had some success over there, but he can't go on forever. And I think regardless of the results, I suppose the results are going to be paramount in the decision-making of Justin Langer going forward and even who the coach is. If Justin Langer's not there for an extended period of time, there may be a bit of change of foot at the top of the order for Australia.
OK, let's go to Joe in Inglewood, wants to talk also about our T20 side. Hi, Joe.
Hi, guys. Yeah, look, I'm probably, now I've been sitting here and listening, it's probably rehashing a lot of stuff. But you're right, Dave Warner was a T20 player before he was a real test player. He's just not doing it. I think we really need to take the T20 side away from test and one-day games and just say it will give you a separate coach, picks whoever he wants. We're picking blokes from Mitch Marsh's or he's in it anyway. But other guys who are just going to get us into the T20. When I'm looking at the England side, and they're playing guys who you only ever see in T20, and they're scoring big runs. We're rehashing guys. And look, I know Finchie's there. If he's the only captain of the T20 side, I'm a bit disappointed. There must be somebody else who could step up for that role.
Thank you, Joe. Yeah, just going through Dave Warner's past 4 scores, 0-2-0-1. Now, albeit we've had some trial practice matches involved there, but certainly not the type of form you want going into a World Cup, as opposed to Marcus Stoinis, who came in at 6 in Australia's last match against India, made an unbeaten 41. So it's certainly a question that has to be asked of the selectors and indeed the captain. What is the best batting order for Australia? As you said, Hayes, they've got all the ingredients there for a good side to make big runs, but we just haven't seen it regularly enough in more recent times.
He makes a great point, Joe, and it's been discussed a lot, whether you do have a separate coach for the T20 side and do you have a separate squad with that. Now, you've got Glenn Maxwell, who now pretty much is one-day international and a T20 player. I think Marcus Stoinis is certainly in that category, but it's hard to rule a line through some of those other players because they are stars. But Steve Smith, you know, could the side live without a Steve Smith? probably. But then you look at the bowling lineup. You've still got Cummins. You've still got Hazelwood's a chance. And you've got Stark as well. So they're our test side. So if you take them out of our side, and we did see an example recently when we went to the West Indies and then we played Bangladesh, ooh, where we had a lot of our mainstays who had been a big part of the test side not play. We really struggled. So I don't think we've got the depth, but maybe you need to do that for a longer period of time. So you build depth and go that way. But you're always going to have that absolute star or two that has to play across all formats.
Can I be honest with you? I love McCricket, and I know you do too. If we got bundled out of the T20 World Cup early doors, I wouldn't really be all that fussed. If we lose the first test at the Gabba to England, that's what matters to us, doesn't it? I mean, I know that's old school. Is that universal? Do most people have the T20 as an interest as opposed to a passion?
It's number three, isn't it? You've got the tests, the Ashes. You've got the one-day international World Cup. I think that's ahead of the T20 World Cup, then the T20. But I don't think it'd be the worst thing if we do get bundled out in a bad way. I think it would shake up that whole system, like Joe's just talked about. The coach, the players, where they come from. Do we specialise with players? I think it could be the start of an exciting period in Australian cricket, because we have been doing it that way for a while with the T20s, and it hasn't worked.
No, maybe you should get Chris Gayle to come on board as a consultant. He certainly knows how to create a stir. He's 41. I think he's going to the World Cup. Good luck to him. By the way, Joe from Inglewood. Hey, how many runners we've got left?
Got one. No, that's it. Very elegant. That goes to Joe. Well done. Yeah, one of the chances.
Absolutely. Yeah, for Damien Lane, Bunbury boy, WA jock superstar, $5 on Fixed on Tab Touch. Very elegant. What a great mare she has been for a long time.
Poor old Damien Oliver. We had another horse, but there was a late scratching today. Gold Trip, another one of the internationals. They seem to be very cautious now, don't they, the vets, with these internationals, given the record that we've had with, unfortunately, a lot of deaths occurring over here on our home shore. So I think it's the right thing. But for Damien, he feels a bit aggrieved because he'd ridden the horse a fair bit throughout the week and he had no issue and the vets hadn't spoken to him. But Gold Trip won't be taking its place.
Yeah, very sad. But for those that have rung up tonight, our first nine callers are in with a chance to win a $50 voucher thanks to the bottler. You've got a horse in the Cox Plate. Should be a cracking race, of course. And on a big weekend of sport, that race will take place tomorrow afternoon. Race nine on what is a 10-race card at the Valley. Stay with us. Plenty more to come on Sports Day. Mark Reddings, Paul Hayes will be with you on this Friday night where it's coming up to 13-7. 10-7. Sports Day, Friday night. Thanks for your company. We're through until 8 o'clock. Mark Reddings and Paul Hazelby, 133-882. Donnie's in Spearwood. Good evening, Donnie.
Good evening, boys. How are we going? Good?
Well, good, Donnie.
good to hear that. Listen, I want to talk about Gerard Brander.
Sure.
The way that poor fella been treated is absolutely appalling. And this will go straight to Adam Simpson. I hope he's listening. You cannot tell me that took him 4 years to say this fella hasn't got second effort. Mate, Paula will call you and beg me because she's from Ellenbrook. She's never seen a waffle game. I've seen so many waffle games this year, it's not funny. And every time I've seen him, he performed. Same as Luke Fawley, okay? Now, for him to be put on scrap heap, it's absolute garbage. Why didn't I trade him last year or year before? This is, we're talking about first round draft pick a few years ago. And to do what they did to him is absolutely unacceptable by the footy, by footy club. That's my personal point of view.
Yeah, thanks, Donnie. Yeah, we've got that on the list to talk about. Oscar Allen came out and said some interesting comments about that. It was based around his contested possession, so clearly there's an issue that the club has had with him in that part of the ground. There is some interest out there, and whilst the West Coast Eagles delisted him, I think he was out of contract, so I reckon he would have had enough knowledge from other clubs that there was interest for him once he got through the trade period. He's now going to get the chance to walk to those clubs as a delisted free agent. The Giants are showing some interest, and it's a smart move from the Giants. They traced Rory Lobb. They need another key forward. They lost Finlayson. And this is a cheap version, isn't it? Like, Rory Lobb's a good player, but he's not a great player, and he would have cost them a good pick and also the wage. But you go towards Jarrod Brander, it's a free hit. Just like Jesse Hogan was a free hit. Jesse Hogan wasn't a free hit for the Dockers because they paid him the big wage, the big picks. But when they got their chance, they didn't have to give much. So I expect them to give him an opportunity. I think Carlton is showing some interest as well. It then becomes about what position. Clearly, you need to settle him down and get some confidence in that position. Is he a forward? We'll give him 3 to 6 months trying in that position. The beauty is if he does fail as a forward, there's backup options for those clubs. Then you can try him as the third defender. If that doesn't work, well, let's try him in the midfield like the West Coast Eagles did. But he needs to learn from this. I think, you know, there's an attitude adjustment that maybe needs to happen where, okay, I'm not as good as I thought. I've got to be working and training harder than anybody else and improve those parts of his game that he's been given feedback on. And I think he can become a good player.
He's the fascinating story of 2022 in terms of fringe players or players that haven't been given a chance at West Coast through obvious reasons. But I think his preference would be to stay in Victoria. But as you know, with the AFL, you don't get those choices.
Well, his preference should be to go to the club that's going to play him.
True.
In the right position. Forget where it is. I think that's so important. Even Kane Corns has thrown up Adelaide is a good idea to replace a Tom Lynch. He could play that role. He's a good lead-up player. That's what he's recruited for.
Absolutely. And you mentioned Carlton as well. Am I just looking at fool's gold here? I just get this feeling that Carlton are doing enough right over this off-season. Brian Cook, Michael Voss, and they're getting some players on board.
I fell for it last year. I had them in my eight last year. So I'm going to go again. Absolutely. I like Michael Voss. I believe in coaches getting a second opportunity. Brett Ratton certainly came back in and had some good results. I think he can do it. But their list is talented. And they've added to the midfield, which they needed to do. And I think cheer up, he'll make a big difference.
Now, just going on that, being a coach yourself at waffle level, just quickly, a second chance, you firmly believe that, and I'm on the same boat, I think you learn so much the first time, how much better, providing the circumstances are right, to get, in Michael Voss's case, just tweak those management skills or coaching skills that you need.
100%. And he's gone to a different environment. He's had basically 8 years and he had some issues. He's worked on that. A lot of it was about empathy and also relationships. And I know for a fact, if I was to get a second job in the waffle competition, you do it so much better. You learn from those mistakes and away you go.
Absolutely. That was part of our sports update for the Bottle-O. Got to love your local The Bottle-O. Great range, friendly service, and they're independently owned by locals. Got to love your Bottle-O, and they have been great supporters of this show.
Darcy Tucker, the other one, a 2-year deal today for the Fremantle Dockers, wants to play on the wing, so there is a spot there. Let's hope he can fill that one.
And he can stay fit. Of course, there's room with Adam Chira moving to Carlton and the midfield for Fremantle needing some extra meat and potatoes. Docker supporters getting excited about 2022. They haven't even started pre-season training just yet. Stay with us. Much more to come on Sports Day. Mark Reddings, Paul Hayes will be with you.
Sports Day for Kia. The new Kia Niro electric SUV range has landed. And Spud Shed. Download the free app and save a spud load.
Welcome back to Sports Day. Big second hour coming up after 7 o'clock. We'll be catching up with Mike Kelly, who's the associate head coach at the Perth Wildcats. He'll give us the latest on the roster and hopefully most of the players and coaching staff out of quarantine and back training. When it comes to the World Game, Daniel Garb is our football expert. He'll be talking about the Matildas' huge match against Brazil tomorrow in Sydney. A-League action, Jack Clisby's back at the Glory. And the Cox Plate, the time-honoured classic at Moonee Valley tomorrow. Gareth Hall is our racing expert. We'll be chatting with him later in the second hour of the show. Of course, give back with a Mac this McHappy Day. Saturday, November 13, $2 from every Big Mac sold, including Mac delivery, goes towards helping seriously ill children and their families through RMHC. Mac delivery is available in select locations. Coming up, the news.
Sports Day for Kia. The new Kia Niro electric SUV range has landed. And Spud Shed. Download the free app and save a spud load.
Welcome back to Sports Day on this Friday night. Mark Redding sitting alongside Paul Hazelby. And great to catch up with Perth Wildcats associate head coach Mike Kelly to kick off this part of the program. Mike, thanks for joining us tonight.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
We're going to talk a lot about the Wildcats, but we've previously in the show been waxing lyrical about the plight of Ben Simmons at the Philadelphia 76ers. I'm sure you've been paying close attention. What have you made of it?
Yeah, it's a really tough situation. I really don't know the inside scoop. So I love Ben Simmons as a player. and want to see him do really well. And it's just it's a shame that it's just kind of hit rock bottom over there. It seems like he doesn't want to play for them, and they didn't say all the right things finishing up last year. So it's seems like a bad relationship. So not sure where that's going.
Is he doing damage to his brand at the moment? If you are another club out there and you're sitting back watching what's going on, are they likely to want to have him a part of their program, given he's going to come at a cost?
Well, yeah, I definitely think that he's not doing himself any favors. Just, and I'm saying this, you know, seeing 10 seconds on Twitter of a video of him where it doesn't look like he's, you know, going that hard in training. So it's hard for me to say, because I know, I mean, he's one of the best players in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So he should be playing basketball at a high level. But yes, I think people would be definitely checking really diligently to see what's going on there before wanting to throw him onto their team, which is a shame because he is so good and has done so well over the years.
Well, it wouldn't happen to the Wildcats, and you can comment on the Wildcats because you've been up close and personal. You're essentially the coach at the moment because Scott Morrison is yet to arrive in town. How has it been with all this playing group coming together and you being in charge?
Yeah, it's been very interesting. You know, it's definitely huge group effort. A lot of Zooms, you know, a lot of Zoom calls where Scott Morrison from Canada right now has been kind of talking to the guys and running through like film clips and basically doing our meetings two or three times a week that way. And then also coaches meetings the same way. And then we go out on the floor and try to execute it. So yeah, it's so different. I think we've handled it about as well as we can. The guys have been super professional and I think they're, you know, almost a self-led team as far as the players are pros and they've been together, some of them, for a while, the core group, you know, Jesse Wagstaff, Bryce, Mitch Norton, Todd Blanchfield. These guys, they know basketball and they know what to do. So along with our staff, it's been, you know, relatively smooth, even though it's a different situation.
Do you have any concerns, despite all that, how self-driven this team is, Mike, that I think early December, first match, that time is of the essence, or is it a case of most clubs are in the same boat?
No, I think we're in a little different boat. But so there's definitely, not that it's a, you know, a concern, overly being concerned with it, but it is different. So we have to be really good with the way we're doing it. And I think we are doing it well. But I think the sooner that Scott Morrison is on the floor, you know, talking to the players in person and making adjustments on the fly in person, the better we are. So I'm excited that it sounds like he's, I don't know how soon, but it sounds like he's going to be here soon. And I think the sooner the better. I mean, it's just a, you know, it's a matter of fact, if he gets here and he can put in his, the way he wants to do things, then I think it's just easier doing that face-to-face. But it's been interesting to see how well the guys have picked things up and as we put in different structures to what they've run over the last few years. And so I'm in two minds, but it's always going to be better when Scott's here in person.
The squad was a bit banged up towards the end of last year. Let's go through a few of the players. Give us a synopsis of how they're going. Bryce Cotton, of course, the number one man, didn't play in the finals last year.
Right. Yeah, he looks great. You know, I've been here almost 3 months now, maybe 2.5 months, and he was kind of just starting up as I got here, and he looks fantastic right now. And I think he's feeling really good about himself, too.
Mitch Norton?
Yeah, Mitch is did end up having a little surgery, if any surgery can be called little, and he's recovering well and is close to being back to full speed.
Todd Blanchfield, the other one that I understand will miss a bit of basketball.
Yeah, he did something to his knee, had surgery, and that was just something that he wasn't even sure exactly what happened during training. But the next morning, it was there was some damage in there, so they went in and fixed it up. And he's doing really well in his recovery, and I think he's even ahead of the schedule that they initially set. Knock on wood, but yeah, he's been great in his recovery, and hopefully we'll only miss a couple of games or a few games somewhere in December.
One of the rising stars of the team is Luke Travers. How has his off-season been? Because I think he's pretty important. I think he's going to have a big future, not only for the Wildcats, but potentially higher.
Yeah, he's been really good. And he's one of the guys, you know, I had been as an assistant coach when Todd was in Townsville, Mitch was in Townsville, and same with Todd in Melbourne. So knew him, knew Majuk very well, and didn't know Luke very well. So it's been really kind of a revelation for me to see him on the daily, and he's been really good. Like, you know, great in the gym and increasing strength, and then also on the floor. He's just dynamic for being 6'8", sees the floor really well, has a great feel for the game. So I think he's been really good, and we're just going to try to continue to develop him.
Speaking with Associate Head Coach of the Wildcats, Mike Kelly. Now, Mike, we know what Trevor Gleeson did as a coach, and we'll just touch on his progress with Toronto in just a second. But with regards to what we see on game day, are you expecting pretty much the same philosophy, or Scott completely different in what he wants from his team and the way they go about it?
Well, I think it's going to be a very different look from the way we're going about things right now. I don't know that the philosophy, you know, Perth has always been known as a very tight group that's been built with, you know, character first, chemistry second, and talent third. And they've had plenty of talent, the Wildcats, over the years. And I think you'll see that again this year. And I think high character guys. So I think a lot of the things will be the same as far as how character driven this team is and how hard it plays. But I think it's going to be very different in that it's going to be offensively maybe a little more open and free-flowing, kind of that NBA style that Scott Morrison has been a part of over the last 7 years or 6 years. And so it'll be interesting to see how our guys adjust to that and, you know, use it to their advantage.
How's Vic Law looking on the court?
Vic looks good. Long and athletic, and he's got a little, came in with a little personality and a little chip on his shoulder, which is fun. He's kind of an edgy guy on the court and, you know, wants to put a stamp on the game. So it's fun just seeing him every day.
Matt Hodgson, the other one, yet to join training. Michael Frazier and, of course, the coach. When do you think you'll have them all together assembled, ready to go for a group training session?
That's such a great question. That's the question we ask ourselves every day. But we're hoping, you know, Matt just arrived. So he's coming in from Queensland. So he does have to quarantine. If that changes, maybe he'll get out of quarantine a little bit early and get to jump on the floor whenever that happens. But I'd say in the next 2.5 weeks, we hope to have everybody on the floor and everybody together, and then getting ready for the preseason tournament down in Tassie.
Mike, been a pleasure having a chat to you. There's a bit of uncertainty with regards to the Wildcats, the squad, and how it's all going to look in early December for the tip-off of the new season. But we appreciate your time tonight, and best of luck for the upcoming season.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
There it is, Mike Kelly, Associate Head Coach of the Perth Wildcats. Speaking of Trevor Gleeson, as I mentioned, he's now with Toronto. They play their second match of the NBA season tomorrow against the Celtics. They're 0-1 defeat so far, but early days for Trevor Gleeson in his new role across there in Canada.
They've still got a bit of time, haven't they? December 3, the first game. And, geez, that's exciting. Listen to Mike Kelly about the offense that they're going to bring, this run-and-stun style that we see in the NBA. It's always been defensive and built around defense here at the Wildcats, but it's going to be fascinating to see it play out, particularly with a lot of those big recruits they brought in.
Yeah, great to hear from Mike Kelly from the Wildcats. Coming up next, we're talking Matildas and EPL with Daniel Gard. This is Sports Day on the Friday night. Mark Reddings and Paul Hayes will be with you.
Sports Day for Kia. The new Kia Niro electric SUV range has landed. And Spud Shed. Download the free app and save a spud load.
Friday night, Sports Day. Let's talk world football, Matilda specifically. And Daniel Garb is our footy expert. He joins us on the line now. Garby, good evening.
Good evening, Skeet. Hello, Hayes. How are you all?
We're terrific. Matilda's, I mentioned in the intro, it's all happening, of course, against Brazil tomorrow, 4:50 Perth time at the Combank in Sydney.
Yeah, and it's a big game for a number of reasons. I mean, firstly, great to have live sport back in Australia, so that's going to be certainly very welcome with a nice crowd there in Sydney as well that'll be packed. The Matildas are building towards the Asian Cup, which is in January, but of course the Women's World Cup at home in 2023 is not too far away. They want to keep building momentum ahead of that. Good performances, victories at home are so important with that in mind, of course, to continue, you know, the positive spirit with that's hovering in the background. And then, of course, there's that big story that's been in the press for the last 2-3 weeks, and that is the negativity around the Matildas' culture, the accusations, allegations, first-hand accounts, whichever way you want to frame them, from Lisa Devano, which has obviously had the team in damage control for the best part of 2 weeks, and how they respond as a result, the commentary around the team, which, well, they've bunkered down a little bit, let's be honest. None of the players have spoken in the lead-up to the game. They'll be saved by the COVID bubble. There'll be no players in the mix zone after the game. So I don't think there'll be too much pressing on that issue after the match, but it's still definitely a massive subplot, maybe even the premier plot for the game, considering what's been happening. So all that in mind, yeah, it promises to be an interesting affair. And you've got a glamour opponent in Brazil.
It certainly is a big deal, but they're coming off a loss as well, our Matildas. They've been in some really good form, of course, a good performance over there in Tokyo. How do you see it playing out?
Yeah, well, they need to keep results building in the right direction because of the home World Cup. And then Tony Gustafsson, I don't think, is under pressure. I think his Olympics campaign was good to make the semi-finals the way in which they did, to beat Great Britain in the quarterfinals. That was a plus. That was a tick. So I don't think he's under big pressure, but at the same time, they don't want to have a string of bad results heading into their home World Cup, heading into the Asian Cup next year. And they want to keep positivity on a high because they know how important it is to build this brand ahead of a massive event. So there's a bit of pressure on them to come out and play well and perform. Brazil are a very good team. We know that, of course. But Australia has matched it with them on many occasions in recent times. So I see it being a pretty even affair. Home ground advantage, I'll go with the Matildas.
A few injury concerns, Chloe Legazzo, Hayley Rasso, Emily Gilnick not playing. What does that present for other players to come into the squad, and who do you think they will be?
Yeah, a chance for some more young players to come in and improve their wares, so that's going to be exciting for them. And I think he wants to build some nice depth in the team and to get some youngsters coming through and impressing. So, yeah, there's opportunities there, but the stars are still around, and Sam Kerr will still be leading the attack, and there's enough quality like Caitlin Ford and Emily Van Egmond and Tegan Micah in goal, and other players who have been mainstays of this team, Steph Catley, who are in the lineup. So, you know, they've got so much depth now and so many players playing in big leagues over in England and other parts of Europe that I think whoever they bring in, that they'll still be strong enough.
Garby, you talked about some of those big events coming up over the next 18 months or so. Does the Matildas, do they plan for those events now, or are they picking teams for winning matches as of tomorrow?
I think he's definitely building towards that home World Cup. I mean, that is everything. The Asian Cup is very important, and that's a big competition. We know that with the men, and it's been that way with the women as well. The Matildas have won it before. But this home World Cup is, I mean, this is a once-in-a-generation opportunity, you know, to host a tournament on home soil. I still don't think a lot of people realise how big it is. Like, we know how big a men's World Cup is. A women's World Cup, it's growing every 4 years into a huge event. The amount of eyeballs that will be on Australia in 2023, it's enormous. And they know they need to make sure that everything goes right for them. They don't need to win it necessarily, but, wow, anything less than a semi-final would be a huge failure. And to be honest, they should be aiming for the final as their bare minimum on home soil next, or in 2 years' time, not too far away. So, yep, I think that is definitely the main focus. That would be the direction and the directive from Football Australia. And that's why bringing in young players all the time and trying them out will be a key part of Tony Gustafsson's plan. Mary Fowler's another one who I think is, I mean, she's a super talent. She is Sam Kerr-esque in the way in which she plays. She'll get more opportunities in the next 6 to 12 months. And that's with the World Cup in mind, because they know they need to make the most of that opportunity. Yep.
Well, Sam Kerr, she'll be the face of it, no doubt. And she's chasing Tim Cahill's all-time record of 50 goals. She's got 48. Can she get it done either tomorrow or in the second game?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's a high probability that would happen. I mean, if there's penalties right now, Sammy Kerr goes on them, obviously. She has missed a couple, but that milestone is one. I think she'd probably want to, you know, get away with pretty quickly just to get the headlines out of the way and a bit of the pressure. You don't want something like that to build, but it's going to be a huge moment when she does it. And I wouldn't surprise if she, yeah, by Tuesday, the second game against Brazil, if it's all secured by then.
Is she the best in the world? I know the Ballon d'Or, is that what it's called, has been released, and she was included in that. Does she win that, or does she feature in the top three? How good is she right now on a world stage?
Oh, she's definitely top five in the world. She's around that mark. I don't know if she'll definitely win the Ballon d'Or. Yeah, we sometimes lose track of the other star players, you know, the Americans and some of the Europeans who are doing incredible things, and we get told how brilliant Sammy is, and our focus is all on her, and that's understandable. But for the last few years, she's been in the mix without necessarily being at that top level. The move to Chelsea has changed things for her, though, massively. She had to go to Europe. She'd done it all in America. She'd done it in Australia. Europe was the new frontier. Making the Champions League final with Chelsea was a huge moment. Winning the league there, dominating that competition, yeah, that's taken her up a level. So now she is a legitimate chance to win the Ballon d'Or. I don't think she quite will yet. I think she's maybe just a rung or two below. If she'd had a big Champions League final and led the way for Chelsea in that, or if she'd led the Matildas to a big medal at the Olympics, that would have probably got her over the line. I think she'll figure top five, not quite at number one, unfortunately, but hopefully I'm wrong.
We talk a lot about Sam Kerr, but Alana Kennedy's been there for a long time too, playing game 100. It's a fair performance representing her country with distinction.
Yeah, she's an excellent player, and look, defensively, they are under pressure. The likes of Alana Kennedy and Claire Polkinghorne, that is the big question mark on the Matildas. How they go at the back, because at the World Cup in 2019, they were exposed there. They were at times in the Olympics, although I thought they improved defensively, their shape and their formation a lot under Tony Gustavsson in that tournament. But there's no doubt every team comes up against Australia and they go, yep, going forward, they've got serious threats, but we can get them the other way. They give you opportunities. They leave holes. Kennedy, Polkinghorne, legends of the women's game, but they're getting a little bit long in the tooth. Do they have the pace to match it with us? And Lana Kennedy's under pressure to keep showing she deserves to play in that position, as is Polkinghorne. You know, so it's another big test for her, these home games against what will be no doubt a speedy Brazilian attack. So looking forward to seeing how she goes, but she's an absolute champion.
Garby, before we get on to talking about the Premier League, just at Commonwealth Bank Stadium in Sydney, what sort of crowd capacity is there going to be?
I think it's 22,500 that's allowed now. So they've ramped it up enormously. And at one stage, it was only 5,000. And then the new Premier, Dom Perignon's come in and he says, opened up everything over here. So I think it's up to 22,500, which will be fantastic. Now, you've got to be double vaxxed to go. You'll have to prove that when you walk through the gates. But, you know, that's the way we're going to be living for the next few months at least. So that'll be the case, and it'll be the case as well when the Socceroos play Saudi Arabia in a massive World Cup qualifier on November 11 at that same stadium. It's perfect for football. It's a brilliant venue. It's similar to HBF Park, obviously a little bit more modern, that you know in Perth ever so well, but just great for a rectangular sport. And, you know, the crowd will be a huge bonus for the Matildas because they'll be pretty raucous, I dare say.
Across in the Premier League, Chelsea's having a really good run of it. 19 points next to their name, 6 wins, a draw, a loss. But a couple of injury concerns, or certainly striker concerns, Lukaku and Werner, both injured. What will that mean in the short term, Garby?
Yeah, it'll hurt. It'll hurt them, definitely. Lukaku's a massive blow because they haven't quite clicked with him up front yet. It's getting there. He's got great quality. And they're churning out the results week in, week out. But defensively, they've been superb. Going forward, still feels like they can get to another level, and now with Lukaku out and Timo Werner as well, hurts them a touch. Probably won't matter tomorrow night when they take on Norwich. They'll win that easily at home. They've still got enough quality, obviously, in reserve, but Lukaku could be out for a month, and some of the trickier games, yeah, that'll hurt. And then, you know, when he comes back, have they quite got that rhythm yet as a group? So look, the title race is clearly between three superb teams in Chelsea, Man City and Liverpool, and United are drifting off at the moment, which is why Solskjaer is under so much pressure. A little injury concern like that can maybe affect the rhythm and maybe lead to Chelsea dropping some points over in the coming week. So, yeah, it's a little setback in that sense for sure.
You mentioned Chelsea, Norwich City, Arsenal, Aston Villa, Man United, Liverpool. How big's this weekend? How intriguing is it from a Premier League standpoint?
Man United, Liverpool's obviously the premier game, the blockbuster. I think it's the biggest game in world football. I know Barcelona, Real Madrid's an enormous contest, the El Clasico, but the Premier League's the biggest league in the world. So these are the two best supported teams in the league. There's no more eyeballs on this game than any other. It's just the way it is. So I can't wait for it. They hate each other. And the major storyline here is that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is under big pressure. You know, United have got no excuses this season. They've got the second or third most expensive squad in world football. They had to contend for the league. They have to have a good run in the Champions League. And they're stuttering through both competitions right now. If Liverpool go to Old Trafford and do United, and the way they're playing right now, it looks the more likely scenario. I mean, the ready United fans who want Solskjaer gone, that will ramp up levels. Games like this determine coaching futures. So while they may not make the change now, it's going to pile enormous pressure on Solskjaer. But they don't have to win, but they've got to put in a big performance and take it to Liverpool and show it that they can over the 90 minutes. So, yeah, it's going to be a massive affair and can't wait for it because there's no game that generates more emotion than that one.
Absolutely. Daniel Garb, always enjoy your thoughts on football. Enjoy particularly the game tomorrow between Matildas and Brazil. Thanks for your time on Sports Day, my friend.
She'll be a beauty. Thanks, boys. Keep well.
There it is, Daniel Garb joining us on Sports Day this Friday night. More coming up shortly.
Sports Day for Kia. The new Kia Niro electric SUV range has landed. And Spud Shed. Download the free app and save a spud load.
Welcome back to Sports Day on this Friday night. Mark Reddings, Paul Hazelby with you. Time to talk Perth Glory. And, of course, the A-League season is closing in quickly. And the name Jack Clisby is very familiar to many Glory supporters. Of course, he started back at Balcatta in 2010. He's been to the Glory, Melbourne City, the Western Sydney Wanderers, Central Coast. And guess what? He's back in Perth. Great to have a chat with you tonight, Jack.
Good to be back, guys.
What's it been like, the environment that you know quite well, in a city you know very well, and a squad which has high hopes?
Yeah, it's great being back, you know, and it's great to see a lot of familiar faces here at the club as well, from the, you know, the staff to the people upstairs and some fans. You know, at the other day, we had our family day and familiar faces from the crowd coming up, and it was just really warm, a warm re-welcoming to be back at the club. And yeah, the squad's shaping up really nicely. We've had a long pre-season, but it's getting close to the season, so all the boys are really excited. And obviously, we've got the addition of Sardinero to come in, and of course, Sturridge, which I'm sure everyone's excited about.
Now, since 2015-16, Melbourne City, the Wanderers, the Mariners, and now back to the Glory, some may call you a journeyman. Is that a bit harsh, or you just take that as part of the territory of being a professional footballer?
Well, yeah, I have been around the country a bit, trying to, you know, apply my trades to different clubs. But yeah, you know, Perth's always been home to me, and I did always want to return one day, and I felt it was the right time for me to come home. And you know, I've gained a lot of experience over those years, and I want to apply that to the team this season and help the team, you know, do as well as we can. And I feel with the squad we're putting together, the way training's been going, I think we can really have a strong, solid season this year.
You mentioned some of the big names there, but what about Brandon O'Neill? He's a big name too, and Aaron Calver with you coming in as well. How has that trio been going in training?
Yeah, we've all really synced in well, you know, and Brano's, obviously I started at Perth with Brano as well, so I know him really well, and it's great to have him on board. And, you know, obviously Aaron as well coming into the squad, first time meeting him coming to the club. But yeah, he's a great guy as well, and it's a really good bunch of lads as well as players, which is I think I've touched on before, is massive. Having a good community within the club and good camaraderie within the players and the staff, and I can see that since the day I arrived, and that's what I love about this club. And yeah, just to be representing WA again and Perth is just, yeah, it's a privilege, and I couldn't be happier to be here.
How many times have you been asked about when Daniel Sturridge arrives and when he's going to get out of quarantine? That has been a familiar question, I'm guessing.
Yeah, well, a lot of my mates are Liverpool fans, so they said they'll be coming to the games this year, which is good. And I think that's also good, not only for the club but for the league, to have, you know, someone of his stature come to the A-League. And he's still, you know, he's in his prime years, so it will be very exciting. And yeah, as you say, I think it'll be good for the public eye to be watching him and how he goes in the Australian League.
You need to get him to tag you into a tweet because he's got 2.3 million followers. It'd be nice to get a share of those.
Yeah, I don't have Twitter, but I know he's got a lot on Instagram, so he's quite well known.
There you go. What about the goalkeepers? Of course, Liam Reddy's been doing it for a long time, but you brought in Brad Jones, who's had a lot of Premier League experience himself, 39 years of age. How's that battle been going?
Well, if you look across the board, there's competition throughout the whole squad with the strength of players we have within the squad, you know, previously, and the ones that have been brought in. So I think competition within the squad creates, you know, a good environment to improve and work hard and, you know, push each other to be the best that we can be. So, yeah, Brad's another fantastic addition to the squad with his experience and, you know, the journey he's been on in his career. It's another great addition to our squad and another leader.
It's going to be a tough start, though, isn't it, for the group? You've got, obviously, the home game and then on the road for up to 5 weeks. It's going to be challenging. Yep. What did the group learn from last year?
Well, yeah, I wasn't here last year, but we know the Glory had a tough time on the road with all the travel and having to stay in bubbles, et cetera. Asian Champions League thrown in there as well. So, but yeah, that was one of the things I noticed. You could see it had really brought the boys together, spending all that time with each other throughout the season. And yeah, I think it's brought this group really close. And, you know, there's laughs each day. The boys get along really well. And I don't think it'll be any different. So the boys have experience in that department of having to play away. And yeah, it is a long schedule, but it's exciting that we can get a thread of, you know, a lot of away games in. So hopefully later down the track in the season, we have a strong lead of home games leading into the nitty gritty part of the season.
Lots of talk about players, be it in tennis, AFL, rugby league, the vaccination, possible hesitancy, all that comes into vogue, I suppose. And I guess another variation to what players are required possibly to do moving forward as professional sportsmen in this country. How have you viewed it from where you sit at the Glory?
Yeah, well, it's something that everyone, I think, no matter what job you're in, you have to look at it as a situation as to, you know, what needs to be done, and that is, yeah, to get vaccinated and help everyone out in the country and worldwide. You know, it opens up a lot more for health security. It opens up a lot more for people being able to travel. And it's, you know, it's something that part of the protocol and that we're all doing. So it's part and parcel of it. And yeah, I think it's a good initiative.
Jack, it's a huge season coming up. We know, as Paul Hazelby said, it's going to be a home start, but then some weeks on the road, and hopefully you get a nice batch of home matches to really complement those tough times on the road. Best of luck. Good to have you home, and hopefully plenty of success coming your way in the 2021-22 season.
Thanks, guys. Good chatting again. I'll speak to you guys soon.
Good on you, Jack. Jack Clisby from the Perth Glory joining us here on Sports Day.
Sports Day for Kia. The new Kia Niro electric SUV range has landed. And Spud Shed. Download the free app and save a spud load.
Thanks for joining us on Sports Day, Friday night. It is the eve of one of the great races on the Australian calendar, the Wait for Age. Cox played over 2,040 metres at Moonee Valley in Melbourne tomorrow. We're joined by Gareth Hall, our racing expert. Gareth, good evening to you. Must be an exciting time, of course, albeit the crowds are down, but the racing quality is still there.
Yeah, hello to you, Mark and Paul. Yeah, it's a great time of the year. Really looking forward to the big race tomorrow, the WS Cox Plate. They had some terrific racing tonight at Moonee Valley, and Melbourne's a buzz. I woke up this morning and there was traffic on the road, and we started to open up a little bit. The pubs, people are outside having a beer. People are just a lot more happier, Skeet and Hayes. So unfortunately, we can't get to the races tomorrow, but we can see light at the end of the tunnel. And I think it'll be a big day in this city tomorrow as we watch Cox Plate Day.
And it kicked off earlier tonight, and you were there for the Manicato, a group one, a weak group one, I have to say. But Jonker got it done, led all the way.
Yeah, it's a great training performance by Tony Golan. We had a chat to him straight after the race tonight. He's done a mighty job with his horse. It's been a little bit frustrating. He's been based in Queensland, and he hasn't seen Jonker for 6 or 7 weeks. And the Snowdens, Paul and Peter, have been helping him out and done a wonderful job. And he had no luck whatsoever there in Sydney in his last start. And Tony Golan wanted Daniel Moore, who's just had a wonderful spring so far. He hadn't ridden a Group 1 winner until this spring. Now he's got 3 Group 1s. But Tony said, Daniel, I want you to go to the front, make your own luck and try and break their hearts. And that's exactly what he did. He missed the start slightly, but then he mustered through the lead. And he just kept going at a really good gallop, and he was too strong. So he's always been a very fast horse, and he deserved that Group 1 tonight, lads.
Let's break down the Cox Plate tomorrow. That's what we're here to get your opinion on here. Hawley, Zaki, last start failure, according to many, a forgive run. Is it the 3-year-old Animo? Very elegant, what a supermare. Where are you lining this race up?
I'm with Zaki. Depending on who you ask, Ed, it's like some people are in the Zaki camp and some people are taking him on. Annabelle Neeson's been adamant during the week that he'll be right. James McDonald's confident that we can see the best of Zaki in tomorrow's Cox Plate. I think McDonald's the key. I think that he'll appreciate that just having that run under his belt there at Caulfield, he was disappointing, but I think he'll be a different horse there at Moonee Valley tomorrow. I'm tipping J-Mac will push the button about 1,000 metres from home. He'll get them running, and I think he'll show his class there, Zaki. I respect Animo, the 3-year-old, who was so good to win the Guineas. And I think there's chances, like the Irish Galloper, State of Rest is a fascinating runner for mine, for Joseph O'Brien. Mwanga's a chance, but I'm just with Zaki. He was the best weight for age horse coming into the spring, and I think he'll prove that in tomorrow's Cox Plate.
We've also got the Crystal Mile there. Elephant, Buffalo River and Rhinoceros going around in the same race. Yeah. Which one wins?
I'm with the Elephant. It was a little bit disappointing the other day. It wasn't like the Elephant to run like he did in the Turak. That was his only real failure in his short career to date. But smaller field, I think the race sets up nicely for the WA boy, Damien Lane, who rode a double tonight at Moonee Valley. I think Elephant bounces back there. Hayes, I think he'll win the Crystal Mile.
Tell us more about this new race up there in Sydney at Randwick, the Invitation, and who do you like?
It's a new race put on by Peter Volandis. He is trying to take on the Melbourne Spring Carnival, so the Everest. You've got the Golden Eagle and Derby Day, and this is the invitational race for the mares. So they invite 12 fillies and mares, or a filly all mare to this race, worth $2 million. I think it's an okay race. I'm not that excited about it, to be honest. But I think Entrevere should be tough to beat. She is a New Zealand mare trained by Jamie Richards. She'll get a lovely run just off the speed. But James McDonald was meant to ride her, but he's decided to come to Moonee Valley, which is understandable, to ride Zaki in the Cox Plate. But I think she's the one to beat. I think Moulin Rouge is the roughie. $26. Perfect preparation for mine for Chris Waller. I think at that quote, she can run a mighty race, lad.
What about across the country, Gareth? Give us some of your better bets on the day.
I like one in the first at Moonee Valley in that 2-year-old race. Now, it's about $20. Sean Matrick does a good job with his team. I think a horse by the name of Wizard King can take a little bit of beating tomorrow. You can get around $19, as I pointed out. And I think the best bet for mine at Moonee Valley is in the Fillies Classic. This filly, Fortunate Kiss, was so unlucky in the 1,000 Guineas. I think she should have... I don't know if she would have won that race, but she should have finished a lot closer. I think she's worth a bet there tomorrow, lads.
Just interesting to see that Hayes is writing down those tips. By the way, that first tip from Gareth, 9:15 Perth time, so he'll still be wiping the sleep from his eyes at that time.
So will Gareth, I reckon, just out of lockdown.
How good's the time difference in Perth? You wake up, when I was over there, your cornflakes, and the first Moonee Valley's ready to go.
Yeah.
And then you go right through to Ascot. Jesus, some good racing at Ascot tomorrow, so looking forward to that. There's a horse that Simon Miller trains. I had a chat with him on my radio show today, and they've got every big name in sport that own this horse in the Belgravia. Of course, its name is It's a Ray Day, but I didn't see Reddings or Hazelby. You're the only big names that missed out in that ownership of that galloper.
Yeah, well, we've got bigger fish to fry. Just quickly, conditions tomorrow at the Valley, a bit of rain forecast. What are we expecting in terms of track conditions?
You know what, Skeeter? The worst tip that anyone can get is a weather report by any of the weather presenters these days. They have been woeful. Do you know what they blame the aeroplanes these days? Because of COVID, that there's not enough aeroplanes going around, so they can't get a proper gauge on what's happening with the weather. It was meant to pour down, and we haven't had a drop. So poor old Marty Simon, he's preparing this track. He prepared for a bit of rain all week, and if he doesn't get it, it will be rock hard and very fast. But they tell me it is raining in Geelong, which is about an hour away, probably the same distance from Perth to Mandurah. But there's still a strong possibility it misses the Valley. So it's a tough gig being a weather presenter or a weather guru these days, Mark.
Just quickly, Gareth, what can you tell us about the crowds for Cup Week?
Cup Week will get 5,000 Derby Day and the same number, 10,000 from Cup Day onwards. So it's a start, but we've done it so tough here, guys. And as I pointed out at the top of the interview, is that just today, driving around Melbourne, heading outside, just the smile back on people's faces. They can go and pick up their grandkids from school. They can meet their mate if you can get into a pub to have a beer. You can go to your local cafe and just live a normal life once again, which we took for granted here in Melbourne. 200-odd days in lockdown. I think it was 240-odd. So 5,000's not that big of a number, but it's a start, Hayes, and we'll take it.
Absolutely. Gareth, as you said, the first at Moonee Valley, 9:15 for Hayes. That's Perth time. It'll be domination by the end of the Ascot or divorce, depending on how we're tracking. Thanks for your time, my friend. Enjoy WS Cox Plate Day.
Hey, love your work, guys. Thanks for that.
There it is, Gareth Hall, our racing expert. Can't wait. The Group 1, the big gallopers, and Zaki is the nominal favourite. Stay with us. Plenty more to come on Sports Day, Friday night edition, here with Mark Reddings and Paul Hazelby on 882 6PR. Back in just a moment to wrap up the show.
Sports Day for Kia. The new Kia Niro electric SUV range has landed. And Spud Shed. Download the free app and save a spud load.
Great to have your company on this Friday night. Sports Day just about done and dusted. Hayes, huge weekend of sport. I talk about huge weekend, at the Valley that is, because outside of that, there's not a lot of round ball football. The Matildas are playing, but certainly all eyes are going to be on Moonee Valley tomorrow afternoon.
Matildas, Wallabies, and also the World Cup kicking off for our Aussies tomorrow night against South Africa. But the Moonee Valley big race, the Cox Plate, it's time honoured, as you said earlier in the show. Look, I'm going to rule a line through a couple of the failures in recent times. You've got Zaki and also Very Elegant. I just don't think they're going to be able to back it up. There has to be some reason they didn't perform, because they have been so consistent in their preparations. I'm going to go with the three-year-old Animo. I think it'll get the gun run. 49.5 kilos. You don't get that very often. I just think it'll be coming all over the top of them. Short straight at the Moonee Valley, we know that. But Animo for me. What about you? Who are you tipping?
I'm sticking with Zaki. Forgive Last Start has done everything right. If it had run a better race Last Start, it'd be $1.90, $2.10.
But it didn't.
It didn't.
If I won a premiership, I'd be a premiership player.
This is its grand final. Bear that in mind. By the way, have you been to a Cox Plate?
No, I haven't. I've heard.
It's one of the great occasions. And as you say, the barriers at the top of the straight, which is only short, the crowd lifting that amphitheatre. It's a wonderful feeling with a capacity crowd. That's not going to be the case, of course, tomorrow. But it is one of the great sporting events. As I say, you don't get much better 2 minutes in sport in Australia.
Who did you watch on that occasion? Which one was the most memorable?
Well, Sunline. Only been to one, and Sunline won that. But there haven't been some great...
Northerly taking on Kingston Sunline. Town, so Winks, four in a row.
Absolutely. So many great memories. And another moment will be created tomorrow. Thanks to your company, Hayes. Plenty of sport, as we said, over the course of the weekend. The Night Shift is coming up next with Todd Johnston. We'll, of course, join you on Monday. Our open line, 133 882. The 8 o'clock news, though, is coming up next.